Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Good evening to all of our admirable friends out there. This is Carol.
And good evening. This is Buddy.
You know, it kind of tickles me every time I hear that intro and then it stops and it's like, oh, okay, now we start.
Now
you
we
know,
start.
We have to start in here. So.
It is a nice intro.
It is a nice intro. I
hope our listeners enjoy it because I like it.
I'm glad. Okay, we got a lot going on tonight. We've got a great subject matter and topic on generosity, but first let's...
Greed and generosity.
Greed
Don't forget
and
the
generosity,
opposite.
Yes, yeah. But first let's do our gratitudes. Do you want to go first tonight?
Sure. I'm grateful this evening for all of the better persons that I've been associated with. When I say better, more developed, male and females, that I've come to appreciate and learn from. Well-developed and not necessarily better in totality, but having admirable qualities that I have been able to learn from over the course of my life. So I'm grateful to have had that opportunity, and I'm grateful for them for sharing their experiences.
And that plays into our topic tonight, but I'll go back on to my gratitude, and I am grateful for the virtue of patience this week. I really felt like I exercised patience and made note of it, and I was grateful for that because there were a lot of opportunities this week to exercise it, and I found
now,
it was quite helpful.
Were those close to home, or was that at work?
That was definitely at work.
Okay. Just checking.
No, not home. We're good with that. We're good with that. So, let's recap. Do you want to recap from last week? Want me to go into recapping?
Yeah, let's just, what we want to do, I think we discussed during the week that we would recap shorter this time.
Yes.
So we can get right to the topic and try to relate, because last week we asked that people consider persistence in their work.
So
during
like
the week.
A call to action.
A call to action.
Sort of like homework.
So why don't we see if there's something that we can talk about regarding our practice.
Sure. Well, in keeping with the theme of persistence, I found that I was more persistent actually in my meditative practice this week.
Huh.
So I found that it had been lacking in previous weeks. And I can't really put my finger on what the trigger was, but I realized that really was under the umbrella of persistence. I guess, when we talked about last week about the three ways that we can strengthen our persistence, we said it was a right attitude or right type of effort and the right amount of effort. So I think I probably attribute it to having the right attitude going in because I wanted to strengthen my meditative practice.
So that's matters of will. You used your will to exercise persistence.
I did. And then once I found after a few days, and And I think it's important to say that it doesn't, I guess, persistence, if you can do it on a more, on a larger scale than what you normally do, say out of 7 days, if you did it 1 day or 2 days, anything that you were actively pursuing to be persistent at.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be for 7 consecutive days and then you, you know, kind of take a big sigh and say, ah, oh, I can't believe I did it. For me, doing it 1 day more than I did last week or doing 2 more days is a win for me.
Now, we talked last week about conviction perhaps preceding persistence. Do you remember what conviction, or did you have any faith in the process, or did you approach it differently?
You know, as I started off when I said about, I can't put my finger on what the precipitating...
Well, what was the intent behind the meditation? What were you trying to accomplish with it? Did you have a goal in mind, or why this week to kick it in?
I think the settling, wanted to be more settled and more clear. I think that clarity kind of...
So was there conviction in the prospect of you meditating, achieving that? In other words, did you believe that that would be the case if you put forth the effort?
Yes.
And that's what I'm trying to illustrate, is the simplicity of conviction that precedes the persistence. So you had intention behind it.
I did.
It wasn't just, I'm going to meditate this way.
Oh, no, it wasn't one of
these. It was purposeful.
Yes, it certainly did.
And you had belief that the process would yield results.
I did.
So that's an element that has to precede our... And it's good for reflection. And again, if you hadn't done it before and you're just starting to meditate, then you'd have to go on some sort of kind of a working goal that this will produce results or will help me. Let's see how it goes.
Right. And it wasn't a case of starting anew. It was a case of reflecting back on
past experiences
and saying, you know, it's like riding a bike. Just get back on.
Yes.
So,
well, the persistence I experienced this week had to do, as you know, I went up to Boston on a retreat to help an organization, a tennis nonprofit. It was a really terrific nonprofit organization that was for spreading tennis and academics in a city environment, youth, inner city environment. And they were holding a retreat, and they asked Alex and I to go up and help put on a strengths conference with them. And it was really an interesting experience. As you know, I've been persistent with trying to interweave the strengths concept is the whole idea of positive psychology and learning how we naturally operate and using those qualities, working on what we do well versus trying to develop personality traits that we don't have.
Right.
And it was really great to go through that with people, have them take their assessment. And I've been at that for about 5 or 6 years now. But what I've been persistently trying to do is work on kind of the weakness side in addition to the strength side.
Right.
And a weakness... And this body of work is a misapplied strength, rather than a weakness being something that we don't necessarily have for a personality quality, which is conventionally what we think a weakness is. You know, I got to get better at math, and maybe you don't have the propensity for numbers. So the strengths body of work and science all has to do with strengthening what you do well. But I've noticed in my experience that the weakness, meaning a misapplied strength, is something that we confront every day, and that directly relates to the stress that we experience. So I've been kind of persistently working on writing that up and trying to apply how in my practice I've noticed that there are a lot of things in the way. And these are supposed to be natural talents that we have.
Yes.
And if they're natural, why do we have to develop them all the time?
Right.
Why can't we just express ourselves? And like I said, I've noticed that what gets in your way are the emotions. So there was an opportunity during the weekend to bring up what I call the 5 barriers to clarity that have to do with emotional obstacles. And, you know, I've been kind of working it through.
Refresh my memory. What are the 5 again?
Unskillful desire, apathy, ill will, doubt, and anxiousness.
Okay.
And these kinds of things get in your way prior
they
to...
They sure do. I mean, check.
So, you know, you can read about yourself and say, yeah, I'm really good at strategy, I'm really good at planning, or I'm really good at communicating, but what happens to me during the day when I'm in the heat of battle, in the heat of emotion, and I don't exercise my strengths? Well, those are when those clarity barriers came
up. And it's not like you lost them, like you misplaced your keys or anything.
No,
because
they're just dormant.
The
they're not being used. You hijack your natural ability because you're emotionally entangled. So I've been working on communicating those things and describing them. In any case, there came the opportunity during the weekend retreat to actually mention them. So I brought them up kind of in just discussing them. And it was just like E.F. Hutton, you know, that commercial?
Everybody stops and,
you know, explain what you're talking about there. Actually, it was preceded by one of the insightful members, a gentleman that's been teaching tennis to kids for a long time in his life, said, this stuff is really great, buddy, but what happens when, you know, we're under pressure and things collapse? So I mentioned to him the side of working on not just talking about what we do well and developing and claiming what our talents are, because that's important, because you got to read about them, you do an assessment, you talk about them. It's all very important and good stuff. But he says, what happens when you know what? So I segued into the five barriers. And it wasn't just him. Everybody wanted to know about it. And then they kept asking me to write it down and describe it. So it was just a good experience of persistence in that area for me. That I've been at it for a while. I've had a hard time communicating what I've learned in that area, especially when we talk about strengths, because so often we just want to talk about it conceptually and say, this is what I'm good at. Okay, now let me go good.
Right.
Well, this body of study has been in practice now for 10 years, and the negative rap on the strengths program is that, okay, now I know my strengths. What else? How do I implement them? And I believe it's these barriers that have a lot to do with why we have a difficult time after 10 years with such beautiful science to not have them practically applied.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, when you think of those barriers, I think everybody can equate, you know, one of them to when they didn't use their strength.
Yeah. Well, I know in our practice, this is real. I'm not making this up, but every time that there's a lot of times when I'm in discussion where people are talking about strengths. It's a very positive, uplifting discussion. Mm-hmm. And when you bring up emotion and negative, it's like, no, buddy, we don't really want to talk about that. Well, this group, for whatever reason, wanted to talk about it. And I think it's a great testimony to the group, because I had this feeling that we were really around some very wise, insightful people that were there for the right reason. The leader was that. I could see the commitment and conviction in her eyes. And the group was like that, and it was well received. So
that's so cool.
It made
me
feel good.
That must have been very energizing for you guys when to see that.
Yeah.
You get kind of caught up in that whole enthusiasm.
Anyways, let's get to the body of the work. And today we're going to discuss generosity and the flip side being greed. But we're going to try to focus a lot on the generosity. And before we go right into acts of generosity and what's generosity and pile right into it, Carol, I really wanted to reflect back on the word generosity or giving, because we've grown up with the definition of a gift, of what a gift means to us. And it's very, very much culturally conditioned in us.
A gift, like meaning like a tangible gift, like a birthday present kind of gift?
Or an intangible gift. But the way I look at it, it's a trade.
Okay.
We've been taught to trade with our giving. That's the heavy conditioning. Do you see it that way since you were young?
I guess, yeah.
Well, let's go back to when we're kids, right?
Sure.
When we're kids, we're very dependent.
Yes.
You were dependent, I was dependent. Your parents are giving you things. So you learn how to receive right out of the gate, right?
Yes. You do.
It's the first thing you do. You don't give first, you receive first.
Well, I remember when the boys were little or something, and they were in playgroup, you'd say, now share. You know, you'd have to almost prompt them.
Well, that's late. I'm saying before that.
You mean babies?
Infants, yeah.
Well, you give them a bottle.
You receive.
Yeah, they cry, you give them a bottle.
Everything, you receive. So right. You learn to receive.
Okay.
That's your first coming out conditioning. Yeah. This is what it means to receive. Your first experience with giving has to do with sharing.
Mm-hmm.
The concept, and it doesn't come natural to us.
No.
So we learn how to share, and that's a trade. Because in addition, we're giving something up and we're expecting something in return. So we are taught that element of trading very young. And I think it's reinforced in our system through the concepts of compromise and government work and business. And you know, the whole economic system is reinforced on this. And when I've looked at this historically versus other societies, some societies learn more about unconditional giving when they're young.
Yes, I have.
More so than we do.
Yes.
And I think it's very important, because I know what we're going to try to get down to the lesson on giving and generosity, that we're trying to approach this from an unconditional standpoint, that it's truly a gift.
Yes,
without
nothing attached, no strings attached.
No strings attached.
Put it out there and let it do its work.
But before we climb that mountain, I want to put things in context. I think this is a difficult task because we're so heavily programmed to trade.
Yes.
That's what a gift means to us. So if we're going to start learning generosity, no matter what age we're starting, we've got to work with two different definitions. Because we certainly are not going to give up on the trade. We couldn't exist in our country without that concept of a gift.
Okay.
That's how business works. That's how your work and your environment. However, what we're talking about in the quality, the mind quality of generosity is no trade. The concept of a gift. It's a straight gift, whether it's tangible or intangible. An act of goodwill, it's intangible, it's no conditions attached.
Okay.
That's the quality that we're trying to develop as an antidote to the greed side. So let's understand that this is something that we're going to have to, just like you put your intentions behind persistence and meditation, we're going to have to put our efforts behind
generosity.
Giving and generosity, because it won't come natural. To do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take us to think about it. We're going to have to be very intentional about this type of giving because it doesn't come natural. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I can see where the stress is related or the reliable happiness is in jeopardy when we put an expectation on the giving,
excellent.
The gift.
So then you see the wisdom in exercising defining a gift under a new guise.
Yes.
New set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
And intentionally practicing that. Because that would lead us to, would that lead us to reliable happiness? You said you can see a trade. Well, tell me how you can see a trade. How does a trade get in the way?
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Just tell me if I'm categorizing this correctly. Okay, say for instance, you know, you're going into a grocery store or you're going into an office building or whatever, and there's a total stranger behind you, never met him before, and you open the door for him and let him go in. I mean, that's a generous act.
Correct.
You don't know the person. There's nothing attached to it. I mean, done deal.
That's
right?
Correct.
So why is it when there's somebody you know, or maybe a family member or something like that, you do something for them, and there might be an attachment to that, and you kind of go, you know, it's like,
why didn't they give me something back?
You know, like I did that for you. Why didn't you, you know, do that for me?
Because the intention behind your gift was to receive. It was a conditional gift. You say, I'll do this in order to get that. It's happening at light speed. And if you're really honest with yourself, that's most of the time you're giving, you're expecting something in return. I know that's the case with me. I mean, well, let's just put it, if I open the door for somebody, a lot of times I expect a thank you.
Oh, wow.
So
I see
it's not,
yeah, I see that.
So it's not totally unconditioned.
Well, how about if you're at a four-way stop and you let somebody go before you because you know you're not there? I mean, you're not expecting a thank you there.
No. Oh, at least you're not.
What do you want, to roll down the window and yell, hey, buddy, thanks so much.
No, so you're looking for acts of giving where you, and you may be a better saint than I am. And,
no, I'm no saint.
But
I'm just kind of thinking, gosh, I'd hate to think there's like everything.
I'll tell you what, I'll place you a little bet.
No,
callers can relate more to me than they can to you. Because the kind of giving you have, and I've seen it, you do give quite a bit unconditionally. And maybe you're having a hard time relating, but I'll bet there's more out there that are trading like me. What do you think? How would you like to bet that?
Well, okay. All right. And this may be jumping the gun or whatever, but maybe when I grow up, I'll be more like you.
No.
But I'm thinking, because I can fall into the trap of being a compassionate fool. Giving.
Oh, now we got some really meaty subject to talk about.
Okay.
So what causes you to be a compassionate fool?
Well, probably giving beyond my comfort zone or...
But I thought there wasn't any trade in your giving.
Well, now I'm kind of thinking about it.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Like, well, let me think. Uh-huh. Now that you mention it.
Okay, go ahead.
And so I find myself kind of knee-deep, and then I just... And then I'm finding I'm all worked up because it's...
Worked up? Worked up because somebody didn't give you back what you expected?
The stress is... Maybe it goes unrecognized when I'm just like, maybe.
Yeah. That's what we've been growing up. That's the way I see it.
But it's not all the time.
I know that.
Can I put a disclaimer on that?
And of course we want to get more to your hopeless romantic kind of approach. I'm all for it, honey. I'm totally for it. Love it. Okay? But I think when we have problems and we're feeling lousy, a lot of times it's because we gave with expecting something.
And then the resentment comes in.
And the resentment comes in. So then you can really work hard on not, you know, letting it go. Don't get upset and rationalize why they didn't give it back. Or you can go through a lot of that. Or we can start developing the real quality of giving without anything expected.
Right.
You know?
But I'm not the one to go. I don't stop. I wouldn't stop doing the generous act because that's just, I just do that.
So if somebody does not meet your
expectations,
if somebody does not meet your expectations when you give, let's say a neighbor.
Right.
And do you say you don't stop? Are you sure?
Well.
You don't kind of go into a cocoon sometimes and say, I've had enough of that.
Well, I would say I still give. I think it might be tempered. I might be a little bit wiser, maybe discern a little bit more.
Okay.
Maybe I'd like to think I was a little bit wiser and not get myself into a bartering, trading kind of thing, that I do it because... it generally makes me feel good, and
I'm
a general
not,
feeling
I'm not
of
saying
well-being.
Trading like this is bad. I'm not saying that. I think it's part of the way we operate.
Right.
This stuff we do all the time.
Right, but it's discerning between what stuff is a trade with the expectation that gives you stress.
Well, I'm just going to submit that the possibility exists that when we give unconditionally, there is no stress. In fact, there's the opposite.
I would agree with you.
That's how, when we give with conditions, there is stress.
Yes.
Manageable stress, albeit, because we have to trade, but it takes time. When I say stress, I mean it just takes work. You got to think about what I'm expecting in return. Is it a fair deal? Should I not overcommit? If I overcommit and they don't give me what I want, then I'm feeling lousy. I'm on the short end of the stick. Remember the old Covey win-win? I've got to make sure they win, I win. There's a lot of work associated with all this trading.
Yes, there is.
There's a lot. I know I've done business and commerce, and it's the element of compromise in government. It's the same thing. You have to come off what you believe to be right, and you have to kind of negotiate. It's a stressful event.
But when it's done unconditionally and it's done right, you do have that sense of well-being, that feeling of like...
Yeah, and that's why it's under the relinquishment category of the 10 ideal mind qualities. The let go, relinquishment and let go, because we are letting go of what we want. That's what happens. We let go of what we want in return. Again, this is just theory. I'm not
so
putting
that's
myself.
The greed part. That's the greed part is that we want.
We want something in return. Now, if we manage that want, then it's not greedy. So we have a manageable approach towards trade. And there are a lot of people that are quite manageable. They do very, very well their whole life that way. They lower their expectations or they do the best they can and they go on. They're not greedy. They leave enough on the table for both parties. But this is a whole different concept. This element of generosity, as defined in the 10 ideal mind qualities, is an unconditional gift. So we have to talk about that and really put a definition on that before we set out and try to practice it.
Right. But you were talking about cultures and going back, because I read Native Americans were very big on teaching generosity within the tribe.
Early on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were, that was one of the lessons.
But again,
when
you say teaching generosity, you're talking about it under the new definition of giving without expecting something
yes.
in return?
Yeah. Yes.
And I don't think it's that hard a thing to do if you start early enough, but that's not the way we started. That's why I wanted to give the history to our listeners initially, is to go through the history of the way we're conditioned so we have a good, realistic understanding of how we behave now and the challenge ahead of us to flip that behavior into one of generosity at an older age. And it's not hard as long as we know what we're doing and we attempt to do it and we're not afraid of failing and we'll go at it and then we'll examine our experience and say, did I really give without any expectation? Let me give you an example. I'm going to give you an example of how I exercise this in my practice. So maybe we can express it. You go out early on Monday and Wednesday mornings and work out first thing in the morning. You go out at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
So I stay here, do my meditation, and then I get breakfast ready and I do the dishes.
Okay. You do?
I do. Never did it during our
life. I'm very grateful for that.
No, it's okay. I'm not asking for that.
Let me
give you that point.
I just, you know.
But I started doing it.
I want you to keep doing it.
I started doing it, right? And it didn't come easy to me because, you know, I don't like doing dishes and I didn't do dishes most of our life, right?
Correct. That is true.
Right. So I started doing dishes and without a dishwasher, cleaning them, getting breakfast ready. So when you got home and before you left to work, we could go the next route of making breakfast and moving on. Well, I'd watch that exercise. And a lot of times I would watch to see whether you would notice that I had done things and give me the old thank you, you know, the attaboy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you did, sometimes you didn't.
Okay.
But as I kept practicing with it, with intention to make it an unconditioned gift, I kept noticing that little man inside that was saying this, and I kept letting it go. And I kept working on the act of generosity, just doing it. Now, there's been times lately where I have enjoyed doing it and I haven't even noticed whether you said you did the dishes. And it doesn't matter to me anymore because I have such a good feeling of doing the dishes. So I know I can change myself this way.
Does that surprise you?
No.
Okay.
Because I've watched my behavior, and if you put enough intention behind things and you develop a pattern like a Pavlovian dog, you can change your behavior. But you have to have a game plan and a strategy of what you're trying to do, and you have to work it. So I've been trying to do it with unconditioned, and it's helped. I feel really good doing it. Right? But
yeah,
I see the
difference. It really does help the whole routine in the morning and getting out on time.
Yeah, but that's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it just to get it done. I'm trying just to do the dishes, you know, as an act of helping, you know, just an effort.
Yeah.
We define that further down as one of the conditions. Let's look at those options there. Helpfulness, suggested form of giving under this new definition.
Right.
Just to be helpful, I'm doing the dishes. I'm doing my share. You know, you're not around, I'm doing them. That's all. Not with expecting anything in return.
I think another one on that list was treating people fairly or justice. That's an interesting form of giving, treating
yes.
people fairly.
Well, we can go through all these. We can go through all these forms. I just before we took our first break, and I wanted to be able to get these two definitions down. Is that okay?
Sure.
You know, a conditional gift and unconditional gift, and I wanted to trace it to the history of how we grew up and how we've been conditioned, And now we can talk about ways of unconditional giving after the break.
Okay.
And then also the benefits that can be derived from it, and see if we have any givers that want to give of themselves, call into the phone, and help others with their experience on greed and generosity.
Great. So we're going to take a break?
Let's take a break.
Okay. See everybody after the break.
All right.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
We're back after our little break, welcoming all our admirable friends back. We were talking about historically what generosity was all about in our culture.
Yeah.
Before we went on the break, and I was thinking, and you can elaborate on this a little bit more. When I think of generous cultures that are generous, those that have traveled, that are lucky enough to go to places wherever, all over the world, that can comparatively say, you know, these people act in a very generous, they're very generous to strangers or things like that. And so I think you've had experience with that.
Yeah, I've gone to, I guess if we're trying to trace it to a giving society, the one I can really recall is Bolivia, when I went down to watch AJ, our oldest son, play soccer with the under-15 national team that went and played down there. And the people were unreal. You know, without even the language, they would invite you in, serve you a meal.
Total stranger.
Total stranger. Unbelievable.
And they weren't people of wealth or means either.
Wealth, no. There weren't even flooring in their floors. There wasn't even running water in some of these houses that we had dinner with. Literally, they were cutting up the meat and serving it. But without the language, it was, you know, we were down there for 2 weeks. I know both AJ and I changed a lot of our perspective to see a different culture, that third world country that would give that way. It was impressive.
I know that AJ, I can recall when he came back, he saw, you know, people in a totally different light as far as giving, and or homeless people or people that had less than he had. He saw that generous, how open they were with very little.
Yeah.
But their wealth was inviting people in and just sharing themselves, which was an interesting.
Yeah. And I guess now that you bring that up, it was a real firsthand experience with a culture that was certainly using that other definition as well as the trade. I'm sure this trade that they have to exist in the meat market and to, you know, when they go barter for their food, there's trades all the time. But what they gave to us, there was nothing expected in return, and they would never take money. We tried. There was just no way.
Well, I know it certainly left an impression on him, for sure.
Yeah.
So but I'm glad you brought that up, because when you were talking about cultures that really were, it showed predominantly their generosity in an overt manner with total strangers. I think I can remember too, well, I just remember, I can't remember which who it was, but one of my sisters was traveling over in Ireland or something, and they were like backpacking or, I don't know, hitchhiking or something, and people would just pick them up on the road and bring them somewhere, and if it was tea time, they'd say, well, we're going to go into this pub and have tea, and naturally assumed that they were going to go in with them, and then, you know, they had tea together, and then he said, come on, get back in the car, and let's continue on. I mean, it was
definitely in your family dynamics, Carol. I watched your family, your dad and mom, they were great unconditional givers. So I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying that there's like a 90% condition or 80, some high level of percentage. So it's not just, we have some in our culture too, but we got to work at it.
But it's a good feeling though.
Oh, it's a great feeling when you give that way. There's no stress associated with it. That's why it's one of the 10 ideal mind qualities.
But it does kind of fill you up inside. It makes your heart bigger, sort of.
Heart and mind.
Yeah.
That heart-mind connection. Because you're not asking, it's not all that thinking and what, you know, all that committee of the mind going on. What are you giving me back? I wonder if he really appreciates what I gave him. Oh, are they returning the gift?
That's a lot of effort, isn't it?
It is. When you just give, that's where that freedom comes from. It's just because there's no conversation associated with it. You just gift. It's just a gift.
Nice.
So why don't we go through these forms of... Let's just before we go to the forms, that expanded definition of giving is a tangible gift or a thought, word, or action without any sense of obligation, an expression of complete freedom of choice that brings about fruitful results. When repeated, this type of behavior leads to the virtue of generosity. Boy, I like that word freedom of choice, because that's when you're exercising freedom. So that's kind of what you said. What's that?
You said an expression of complete freedom.
Complete freedom. Because there isn't complete freedom when you're expecting something in return. When it's truly a gift, there is complete freedom. You have exercised that innate freedom that you have.
Right. And we're not talking about a gift. We're not talking about a gift as far as a monetary gift or a material gift.
Well, it could be.
That's the tangible effort. But we've got a phone call, actually. Ian is on the phone.
Let's talk to Ian.
Okay.
Hello, Ian.
Hey, buddy. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Ian.
Just thought I'd call in because seeing the subject of this week. Hang on, let me just turn the radio down. Just now, we finished dinner here, and I'm doing the dishes and emptying the dishwasher, etc. You remind me of this, and we're dog sitting at the moment, and this new dog is a bit he doesn't really know where he is, and he just pooped and peed all over the floor. So I got out and started clearing that up, and started going through my mind was, well, I hope one of the others picks up the dishes since I'm doing this for them. And then I realized that I was doing that, and quite amazing. I just let it go and cleaned up the mess, and then went back to doing the dishes and stuff, and didn't really think at all of it again. So the actual reminder of this, the subject today was really effective in just bringing that to mind, and it was literally just let it go. It was an amazing experience.
And did you feel that sense of freedom when you did?
Yeah. I called because you were talking about that, all the committee of the mind and all the stress that's going on. And
yeah.
Absolutely. It was, I just got on and finished the job and I can't even remember if I was thinking about anything. I suppose I was just
washing the dishes.
Yeah. So thank you for making this the subject. It's really useful. It's a little tiny thing, I know, but it makes you realize that you can actually make a change in little steps like that.
Well, and it's not tiny when you realize what you did, Ian. I mean, the fact that you were there to close the loop and experience that freedom and recall it, that's not a tiny event, because that's going to be repeated now because you've got some conviction in the process. That gets back to the persistence, from last week. You know, you've got some belief that this process works when I let go. So I've got conviction in the process. I'm going to be persistent now about letting go and catching yourself when you're holding on. It's not tiny at all from my perspective. Those are the little things in the practice that
make big dividends.
The big dividends. When you actually close the loop.
Yes.
Like you just did, Ian. And I appreciate you sharing that. I hope there's others that could hear it. This is not a difficult proposition. We're not trying to solve E is equal to MC squared. This is basic stuff. Just come up with a new definition of generosity. Throw away the condition. Exercise it. Throw it away. How's it feel? Did it feel freedom? Yes. And I think by talking about it, like through the Admirable Friends discussion and continuing to have this dialogue, others will join because it is that simple. And that's the conversation that we want to shift to, because if we just keep talking about what we want in our life, it's just going to get a continued growth of a narcissistic society. Don't you guys see that? Do you see it, Ian, around you? That if we just keep talking about what we want, where's it all going to go?
That's exactly how I see it. Yeah, because you realize there's a lot of people realizing that it's not going anywhere, and so this conversation might not make complete sense to people, but I think there's enough there to start realizing that we've started. And I would add to that, if anybody's out there listening, wondering whether they should call in, it really is the calling in that's the important thing. Buddy and Carol have worked hard for many years to try and put this together in a way that's acceptable to our Western ears. But really, as I understand it, the essence of Admirable Friends is they and I certainly want to hear from other people, because I know there's people out there that have had experiences that I will learn a lot from. So. Just if you are thinking about calling in, please do. We'd love to hear.
And it's not just the experiences, Ian. It's just knowing, I think, there's an insecure aspect of all of us. And I think part of Carol and I starting this was we just want to connect with others that are out for the same things. It's very difficult to try to do this.
And just putting ourselves out there and saying, you know what, this is what I do every day. This is how I feel. Yeah. I know that there's others out there that do and say and feel.
But when you call, Ian, it makes us, when you call or I get a text from Tom from New England, it just makes me feel very whole that I'm not crazy.
Right. You're not alone.
Yeah.
You're just one of.
Yeah. That's true friendship. It's like, okay, I'm not nuts. They're doing the same thing.
Right.
You know, because I'm sick and tired of wanting everything and complaining and seeing entitlement. And then you go through the process of the entitlement of the other people are being entitled. I'm not being entitled. That was my middle years. And then you realize you're just as entitled as they are. You get the same attitude. You're wanting everything. And you're just trying to get your side of the bargain. Until you shift and just say, forget it. I'm off this train. And thanks, Ian, for sharing that.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that's the authentic life that we're talking about. It's, you know, putting yourself out there and saying, I know we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
But we're, like you're saying, we're shifting the conversation from the...
to our real true intentions behind our actions. And are we giving with the intent of wanting? So it's basically we put a mask on and we're pretending. Or are we giving... and just try it. When you give without that intention of wanting something back, it feels good. It is less stress.
Right. And like Ian said, which was really kind of brilliant, that, you know, at first he thought, I hope somebody, you know, picks up the slack over here. And then he let it go. But just kind of like imagine, let's take the story and imagine the flip side of, you know, if he didn't and he's thinking about it and he's harboring it. I mean, look at all the energy that's encompasses
you could see that
thought.
He didn't give us what was going on, just a little partial point, but when he said he let it go, that's what he let go. I could feel it when he was describing it. You know, he let go of all that talking, and it was over.
And gosh, how liberating is that?
Because where was it going to go?
Exactly. I mean, That's why I say it's liberating. It's sort of like somebody takes the, you know,
will
the
she
chains
help
off.
Me? Won't she? Why isn't she? You know, it's all these little
triggers. I can't believe.
You
it. Do
and there's a whole narrative associated with it, a whole storyline.
Yeah,
it's exhausting. Let's shift again.
Okay, so we're talking about the suggested forms, the new forms, and I think before the break we were talking about treating people fairly and non-harming. That's kind of an unconditional gift. Forgiveness is a gift. Forgiveness.
Oof, it's a tough gift. Big gift.
You know, not harboring ill will and forgiving or...
But that's an example of an unconditioned gift, right? I forgive you. You're not asking for anything in return.
Right.
It's a good example.
Yes.
I forgive you.
That's powerful stuff right there.
And then the last one is that goodwill, which we covered in lesson three, right?
Right.
After
the kindness, the kindnesses towards others. And what about generosity towards yourself?
Well, that's an important aspect. I think you have to be that way.
You know, I think.
Well, what does that mean to you, though?
Well, I don't know. I do know. If it goes to intent, if it's a trade issue and you're trying to do something nice for somebody else to get either recognized or affirmation or a thank you or something like that, then I'm thinking that's an outward pat on the back. It's not, obviously it's not good, it's not enough that I do it and I'm almost self-pacifying, you know, like a baby. Like if a baby was always given a bottle, excuse me, every time it cried, it never learns to self-pacify.
Right.
So perhaps that's part of it in an adult form. You know, I can't self-pacify myself. I'm looking externally for that affirmation or that thank you or, you know, something to do with that action. So that goes back to the intent. But that's an interesting kind of...
Let me give you an example of how you could give yourself an unconditional gift.
Sure.
You let yourself off the hook when you make a mistake.
Well, but then who would I beat up?
You don't. You look at it as an action.
That could be my second occupation, beating myself up.
Right. So
I do that full time.
But that you asked how you could give yourself what this new form definition.
No, I say it in jest, but you're absolutely.
But there's a perfect example. I make a mistake. I mean, just like when the baby falls down when it's learning to walk, it never had to beat itself up and get mad at itself. It just got up and learned. So when we try to do this practice and we find ourselves like I did doing the dishes that I was expecting, or like Ian did that he was expecting, he didn't blame himself. Right? He did. He gave himself a gift by letting go.
Right. So is it the chicken and the egg kind of thing? Is it like you have to be generous to yourself before you can be generous to others? Or once you're generous to others, you're generous to yourself?
It's the same, I think. Remember that experience where... Sister Tantwe told me that I posed that question to her just like you did. And she said, I want you to imagine you and Carol going down in quicksand. And you're both going down and there's a tree to your right. What do you do? And I said, I grab the tree and then I grab Carol and we get out of the quicksand. She goes, see, so helping yourself is helping others. It's one and the same thing. So Ian talked about, you know, letting go. Without a condition, he was a gift to himself because he caused less stress to himself.
Right.
Remember, the context of all of this reliable happiness is doing actions, words, and thoughts that lead us and or others to less stress. So he's causing less stress to himself. He's giving that gift of generosity to himself.
Yeah. I think that's a good call to action. I think I'm looking forward to this week.
Oh, that'd be great for both of us. This is, you know, and that gets us into the real issues, the benefits with this new definition. Because, you know, this is the big one. Generosity is the big one. Because the common theme in all of our stress is we are taking more than we're giving. That's why the stress is there. So you can trace most acts of self-induced stress to selfishness. Wanting something, a situation to be different, somebody to be different,
that's
right?
Yeah,
so
that's true.
The immediate antidote to this form of stress is to let go and to give. Stop taking. It doesn't come natural because, like you said, the first thing we learn is how to receive as a baby. And so we go through the maturation process in our life, learning how to lead a better quality life. And as we do more and more of that, we learn to go the other way. So this is the biggie. If you listen to the Dalai Lama, he just talks about be kind, be generous. That's his practice.
Well, somebody once asked him, or he's asked often, what's your religion? And he says, my religion is kindness.
Right.
That's his standard line.
Yeah.
So that's...
Now, again, if you take kindness in the context of the other definition of trade, you're going to get slaughtered. That's a compassionate fool. Because you're going to go out there in a world of wolves and you're going to exercise kindness without any idea, any context. You're doing it with hope to, please recognize me here. I'm giving you something. Yeah, yeah, thank you very much. I mean, that's how we have the difference in wealth in the world. The guys at the top get greedy and leave no crumbs on the table for the people at the bottom. It's the way it works.
Interesting.
Okay. So let's kind of go through that benefits of the new definition.
Well, there's no doubt that the benefits of giving you that feeling of well-being, that you've done something for somebody else, outwardly to not yourself, to somebody else.
Yeah.
Somebody else has benefited from the gift. So I think that's a nice feeling. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
You know what I read somewhere else that it said that the benefits of giving, it's we put ourselves in a position of wealth, which I thought was kind of, at first I thought, well, that's kind of a interesting phrase.
Right.
But it says because the gift itself is proof that we have enough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we've got enough, it's like, it's the sharing. It's like, you know.
That's what my dad taught me before he died. Before you get up from a table, he said, use the example of a food. Know when you've had enough. It's basically saying, stop your wanting. Recognize the beauty in what you've received. Know you've had enough. And you're operating from an abundance or a wealthy mentality. You've got all you need. I mean, this is really simple, conceptually.
It really is.
This is going to be the easiest lesson that we have to talk about. And it's the silver bullet as far as the direction of where we're going. And as long as we don't approach it like, oh, I'm just going to go out this week and totally change from trading and expecting and being a compassionate fool like we all can be on the bad side of deals and expect us to get fixed overnight, as long as we just keep making one step, that conviction will grow, which will lead to persistence, which leads to us paying to more attention of what we do, more intentional about our actions, to deeper levels of observation, more refined levels of observation. Our wisdom grows. And that brings us right back to conviction, persistence. That's the practice. That's how this works. And of course, you have to do it among admirable friends because others will learn. And that's why I put on the title of this sheet of paper, Contagious Generosity. When you take that concept, that new definition of generosity, and you put it in a stew with admirable friends, it's a winning recipe. You know, we just got to get the forum together, honey. We just got to do it radio. We got to have a social network that we're putting together. Trust me, this thing's going to work.
You know, you talk about a stew and a soup. Do I have time to tell this little story?
Go ahead.
There's a book. It's called Stone Soup. I might have told you this. Did I tell you this? It's a book that I used to read the kids when they were really small. And it was about this traveler that went into this small little village or town. And they very poor. Town and he came in. He was a stranger. They were very suspicious of him, and he said he was hungry and no one would give him anything. And so he had a pot and he filled it with water. And he said, "Well, since you're all poor and you seem as hungry as I am, I'm going to make some soup." And so he took the water and put a stone inside. Well, then somebody came out and said, "Well, I have a carrot," and they put it in the pot.
Yeah.
Somebody said, "Well, I've got a turnip," and they put it in the pot. And before you know it, everybody from town had one thing. And it turned out to be a major feast because everybody was opened themselves to be generous.
And started a stone.
And it started with a stone.
Contagious. What a great example. You're wonderful.
Stop it.
I remember, we're going to keep all these clips. These are our memoirs.
It was a great little book. Now that I think of it, I should get it because I really want to.
Yeah.
I remember that story. I thought it was very cool. Anyways, so that was just kind of the contagious generosity that, you know, somebody starts, it's like the ripple effect. You know, you drop a stone in and you see it all ripple out. So it all happens. So
You've really perked up during this hour.
I tell you, I love generosity. Now I'm all gung-ho. I'm going to be so persistent on generosity.
I just hope I haven't led you up to go to a compassion fool again.
You've created
and get slaughtered again.
You're such a good person. Of the negative consequences.
Such a good person.
So anyways, what are some of the other benefits you get anymore?
Benefits. Further develops our confidence in ourselves. That's a pretty good benefit. Good feeling in the mind.
I take it. Sure.
Yeah. And like we said, we close with that antidote for unskillful or excess desire. The confidence gained from such a giving practice would allow us to overcome a lot of the initial difficulties with practicing the other mind qualities, as a large degree of self-induced stress is caused by us wanting more or wanting a situation to be different. No kidding.
I think I'm a victim of that. I'm always wanting something to be different, or, you know, wanting it to be different. Why can't it be this way, or why won't it be that way, or so.
Yeah. No, I was just noticing we've got a text coming into our Facebook page. See if there's any comments that are.
You better find it quickly because we're wrapping up.
Easy.
What's the call to action this week?
We're not done with it. Yeah, we got a few more minutes here.
You sure?
Yeah, we do.
You sure?
We do. You've got a fast clock there. You just chop at the bit to go be generosity. Am I going to be the beneficiary?
Did you do what?
Of this generosity.
Of this generosity.
Yeah. Common denominator of excess wanting is a predictable cause of stress. Think about the times that we have given this way. Hasn't it really felt good? When we were young, I remember when I first gave my mom a coffee machine for Christmas, and there wasn't any conditions. I remember how good I felt, that first element of giving. You know, it's a shame that that whole thing wasn't nurtured more and more.
You know, I remember, and I guess it was a marigold we planted at school. You know, you bring it home for Mother's Day or something like that. Somehow carrying that little marigold in that little milk carton thing, I had to have been all of like first, second, or third grade because I remember exactly the school. Crazy how you remember these things.
It does.
But it's an it goes to show how impactful giving is. Don't you think?
Yes. Can I read the last couple, two quotes that I left in the paperwork from two of the best teachers.
Okay, go ahead.
One coming out of the Bible, Matthew,
okay.
Chapter 6, verse 1 to 4.
Better hurry.
Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you.
That's lovely.
And the other quote I put on our paperwork this week was by the Buddha, another great teacher. His quote is, "These two people are hard to find in the world. Which two? The one who is first to do a kindness and the one who is grateful and thankful for a kindness done."
Those are admirable friends right there.
And they say they're two hard people to find this world.
Oh, I think we've got them right here on Tuesday nights.
Yeah, they're there. And I agree with Ian, it's great when they call in, but you know, as we keep expanding with the social network and people listen to us on the podcast and then go to iTunes and look up Admirable Friends on iTunes, it starts this way. You know, it starts listening, people start practicing, and the more they practice, the more secure they'll feel talking about their experience.
I agree. So it'll come.
I agree. And let's close with, let's try this week and see if we can bring some stories about this new form of giving and generosity.
I look forward to next week's program so that we can see, hear some of the experiences.
And Carol, how can our callers reach us?
Oh, they can email us at hello@admirablefriends.org.
.org. Terrific. Well, Admirable Friends, we're going to sign off today and really
thank
appreciate all of you. We
listening.
Know you're out there, and hopefully we've helped stir up the thinking.
Absolutely.
Great.
Good night,
Take
everybody.
Care. Good night, everybody.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.